This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 17th, 2011. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Later on the program, the Fort Smith Symphony prepares for a season finale that includes harmonicas, Gershwin, and Elvis.
We'll begin with jobs in the environment. In a moment, how three Job Corps centers in Arkansas, including one near Ozark, are preparing young people for occupations with sustainability in mind. First, the University of Arkansas is also thinking about preparing a workforce more familiar with the environment. As our energy correspondent Christina Thomas reports, the U of A will begin offering a sustainability minor.
When University of Arkansas professors asked students on Facebook if they would be interested in a minor in sustainability, they received hundreds of affirmations within the week. A steering committee was formed last spring to develop the minor. It will be available to students this fall. The course catalog says the purpose of the program is to provide foundational knowledge and skills related to the emerging discipline of sustainability around four thematic areas: social systems, built systems, managed systems, and natural systems. Dr. Stephen Boss, professor of geosciences and co-director of the steering committee, says that the main driving force for the program was a commitment the university signed.
In 2007, the University of Arkansas was one of the first 100 signatories nationally to a document called the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. And in that commitment, there are real promises or commitments that the universities make to pledge to improve their performance and to engage in activities that will help mitigate climate change in the future. And among the things that's in that is a pledge to infuse sustainability and sustainability principles across the curriculum at the university. So as a consequence of that, this effort is a spinoff of that to get curriculum matters going and to put some things in the curriculum in an organized way. And we actually, turns out, we teach a lot of courses on campus that are relevant to sustainability, but they're spread across a lot of different departments in different colleges, and they're not really coherently brought together as a single curriculum in any way. So that's part of what this minor was about, was to try to do that.
Tahar Masadi, the other co-director of the steering committee and an associate professor in the School of Architecture, says that the timely nature of this program was a major reason to engage the domain of sustainability.
I do believe that we have gone through some societal changes that, if you will, compelled, if you will, the university community to address these issues in breadth and depth rather than just a lip service to these issues. And for me, this program is a testament to the, if you will, to the commitment by the university to this subject that is looming very broad in the future. And I think we also have to sort of recognize also that the subject of sustainability is multifaceted.
It is that multifaceted nature of sustainability that makes this program campus-wide and available to students of all majors. The mandates the committee put into place were for this to be an interdisciplinary minor touching on all aspects of sustainability and to be accessible to the broadest cross-section of students. It was built to the maximum extent with classes that were already in place.
They're spread across all the colleges at the university and a great number of departments. There are courses in ecology, courses in geosciences, courses in sociology, courses in the College of Business, courses in architecture and engineering. There really is a pretty broad menu of elective courses that students can use to satisfy the requirements of the minor. In addition to the elective courses that are required, we did create two new courses, one of which is called Fundamentals of Sustainability, and then the second course that follows on to that is called Applications of Sustainability. Those two courses are required of all the students who want to take the minor.
Doctors Boss and Masadi are both teachers of those required new courses. In addition to the classes, students must engage in a hands-on, real-life experience involved in something concerning sustainability, such as a service learning project, internship, or a research project.
And that gives students real practical application of what they're learning in the classrooms here at the university to solving real problems outside the classroom in our society. And I think that's going to be a very valuable experience for the students to engage in that kind of thing.
One way to get that hands-on experience is through the Belize program, a study abroad course that the university has offered for a number of years. Each summer, a group of students and faculty goes to a small community in Belize and participates in a broad spectrum of sustainability development projects.
They're involved in sustainable agriculture projects down there. They're involved in the local community, in the schools, and helping with community development projects down in Belize. And it's been a really fabulous program for a number of years now at the university. All of the students who go on this come back, and you know, I think they almost universally comment what a life-changing experience it is for them to go down and to participate in something like this and be really working towards this common good.
The minor is not limited to current students. Those who already possess a degree but are interested in the sustainability courses may soon be able to gain a graduate certificate by completing the program. Anyone in any field stands to benefit from the program. Dr. Masati says that it is the intention for students to enroll in classes in various areas of coursework.
We even now have designed, if you will, the capstone, or any other course for that matter, where students are actually almost mandated to engage at least two or three disciplines, and at a minimum two. The reason is because we see the importance, if you will, of that multidisciplinary understanding of a problem rather than just looking at it in a very narrow way.
As the interest in sustainability increases, so does the need for education and cohesiveness concerning the subject. Dr. Masati says that as a society, the attitude towards sustainability needs to change to become more collaborative.
If we come to sustainability and if we really believe in the fruits and the benefits of sustainability, we really have to be open-minded and be, if you will, almost genuinely multidisciplinary in our behavior, in our actions, in our acts, so that we, you know, if a sociologist comes to speak to an engineer, for instance, there is a genuine collaboration. I think the old ways of doing things, you know, that are siloed, if you will not really operate properly for sustainability. So there is a cultural shift, if you will, that has to happen for sustainability to be effectively engaged, you know, within a university setting. And I do believe we are very successful at that.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Christina Thomas covers energy issues for Ozarks at Large, and support for her work is provided by Energy Corps. Another corps, the Job Corps, is also eyeing how the job market and the environment will be tied together in the 21st century. As Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net reports, the organization is training young workers for a new economy.
In 1964, President Lyndon Johnson established the Job Corps, the nation's largest residential, educational, and vocational training program for economically challenged youth. With three centers in Arkansas, Job Corps is taking steps to protect the environment and connect students with employers through green job training. The U.S. Department of Labor-administered program is preparing students for the rapidly growing green economy in a number of fields. We go into the field in Southwest Little Rock to learn more in this week's Clean and Green.
The reason why we're going to go over this is we have a couple projects we are going to do on the center, and I want you guys to understand why we're doing these projects.
These Little Rock Job Corps students are preparing for their future in this heating, ventilation, and air conditioning classroom. And this green lesson they're learning today will be a huge part of that process. HVAC is just one of the career technical areas to emphasize green training on this beautiful 32-acre campus. Students here are taught the latest green innovations in other fields like plumbing and facilities maintenance. But on this campus of almost 300 students, instructors have taken it even a step further. They've gone solar, like the panels that were installed on this gazebo with student help during on-the-job training.
It runs off of solar panels for the lighting. Then we have the three electric vehicles that we have. So we built a solar charging station that don't have to be plugged in using grid power. They can just be plugged into the solar charging, and it's a true green project. From there, we also have other auxiliary lighting that runs off of solar panels throughout the center. And when we build our security building up front, it'll also be running off of solar lights and things like that.
That's maintenance supervisor John Scotty. Today, these HVAC students are learning how to install a digital programmable thermostat. Manufacturers say installing one of these thermostats can save a homeowner as much as 33% on their heating and cooling costs. Besides the technical end of it, that's the sort of green concepts about energy-efficient equipment HVAC instructor Jason Denny wants his students to grasp before they graduate.
We're really trying to teach our students the importance of being green, being environmentally friendly, introducing them to green building practices. Heating and ventilation can make up to 45% of the average homeowner's utility bill. And so it's very important to teach our students how to help conserve energy.
That goal for Denny's students begins in the classroom with this textbook, Your Role in the Green Environment. And the philosophy is carried out across this campus as students learn their various job skills. It costs employers nothing to partner with Job Corps, but what they'll gain in return is job candidates who not only understand what sustainability means, but who have also been highly trained to take those concepts into the field.
It's my goal to have our HVAC students graduate, enter into the construction trade, make good decisions based on some of the things that we've been able to teach them here, decisions that are going to be good for our environment and will help save our planet.
Intro to green.
There are two other Job Corps sites in Arkansas besides Little Rock. One is in the western Arkansas community of Ozark, and the other is in the Garland County community of Royal.
That's Roby Brock reporting. He is the editor and publisher of our content partner, TalkBusiness.net. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information available at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at VZW.com/small business. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is John Jetter. He's the music director and conductor of the Fort Smith Symphony. Welcome back.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very good. This is a time of year when a lot of people are talking about season finales.
That's right. Yeah.
And you?
And we have one coming up. Saturday evening, May 21st, at the Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center in downtown Fort Smith. We are ending the season with a concert we're calling Harmonically Yours. It is a pops concert featuring Robert Bonfilio, who is the world's foremost concert harmonica soloist. There you have it.
Yes.
Robert is terrific. He is a classically trained woodwind player, harmonica soloist, and composer. His master's degree is actually in composition from Manhattan School of Music. And if you look on his website, Google Robert, he is a full-time harmonica virtuoso. Now, people might be thinking, okay, well, he probably plays in a lot of clubs and things like that. No, he performs almost exclusively at classical music festivals and with symphony orchestra. He is busy and has been in demand for at least the last 20 years as a soloist performing a number of concertos. Yes, there are concertos for harmonica and orchestra. There are quite a few. There are concertos by Villa-Lobos, Malcolm Arnold, Darius Milhaud. Beethoven didn't write a concerto for this instrument, but there are actually a lot of pieces, and they are legit concert works. And he has really been very important in making the harmonica being accepted as actually an established concert instrument. It's still a lot of fun to play. Mm-hmm. And he's a terrific artist. He actually does it, believe it or not, he does a few pops concerts here. You'd think, oh, he'd be in demand as a pop. He is, but he's doing all these big concertos. We, however, are having him come and perform with us in a pops format. And he'll be performing three kind of large-scale suites for us. He is doing a Gershwin medley. It's called Sweet George, but Sweet is S-U-I-T-E, so George Gershwin's Sweet. And he'll be performing music with the symphony. He'll be performing I've Got Rhythm, Embraceable You, Lady Be Good, It Ain't Necessarily So, Fascinating Rhythm, Summertime, So Wonderful, and He Loves and She Loves. So that's all the big Gershwin tunes on one piece. He'll also be performing a Stephen Foster medley, and those pieces will include every Stephen Foster favorite. My Old Kentucky Home, Camp Town Races, Ginny with the Light Brown Hair, Ring the Banjo, Beautiful Dreamer, Old Folks at Home, and Oh, Susanna. So those will be fun pieces. But we're ending our season finale, with a large-scale suite for harmonica and orchestra called Elvis Lives, and it features the following pieces with harmonica and symphony orchestra: Heartbreak Hotel, Can't Help Falling in Love, Hound Dog, Blue Suede Shoes, Love Me Tender, All Shook Up, Hard-Headed Woman, Are You Lonesome Tonight, Don't Be Cruel, and Jailhouse Rock.
So you've got Stephen Foster,
yes,
you have George Gershwin, and you have Elvis Presley.
Yes. Three giants
of American popular
music.
That's
right. And we are throwing in the overture to The Poet and Peasant by Franz Suppé, which is a popular light overture that opens the program. Then we'll perform the Stephen Foster and Gershwin medleys. And then after intermission, we will begin with Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody number 2. That's the real famous one. Mm-hmm. And then ending with this Elvis suite.
How many harmonicas will he use throughout
the
concert?
That's a good question. I think he brings 6 or 7. And I know for these medleys, he's going to switch harmonica.
Because that's interesting, because often when you have a guest artist or visiting artist, if it's a pianist or a trombonist, I mean, they have the one.
That's right.
Maybe a horn player might have a second one or something.
Right, exactly.
But here...
He's bringing the whole collection. And again, these are terrific pieces. All of these three works that Robert's doing, they've all been their arrangements by a wonderful composer, arranger named Eric Knight. They were written, arranged for Robert. And I thought it would be a real fun way to end the season.
Do you have a checklist of, okay, you know, what instruments we haven't featured yet? I mean, you've had bagpipes, right?
Haven't had bagpipes.
Have you not?
Well, bagpipes are, that's tough. One of the things that's so funny in the bagpipe world is I believe all bagpipes, someone will call me a bagpipe person, mm-hmm, but I think they're all pretty much in D major. It's a transposing instrument. A lot of bagpipers kind of forget that, and a lot of music kind of doesn't... I know of a number of cases where bagpipers will, maybe if they're local regional artists, will come and perform with an orchestra, and mm-hmm, it's like, well, wait a minute. This is all, you're playing it in the wrong, for some reason. Yeah, it's very strange. And a lot of the music, a lot of bagpipers is different world. There's a very famous piece by, Peter Maxwell Davies, I think, called The Orkney Wedding, that mm-hmm features bagpipe with the symphony orchestra. I guess the short version is, if we ever feature bagpipe, we're going to do our research.
Gotcha.
Probably to fly someone in from Scotland, right?
Right.
To play. But yeah, no bagpipes. We've had banjo.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have electric guitar next year. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Or actually, we'll get to that in a few months, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, if you know what I mean. And we do try to vary things. When you bring in a soloist, it tends to be, for classical programs, the most popular would be violin and piano. Mm-hmm. And then it's nice to vary it a little bit. And on a pops program, you can have singers, harmonica soloists. But it's a real different sound world. In case anyone's kind of thinking, for the Elvis Lives medley, I was sent a performance that Robert did, and the audience, to give you an idea how this goes over, the audience is so noisy, yelling and screaming. They love it so much that I actually can't hear a lot of the music. Now, I know that won't happen. We have a more well-mannered audience.
Restrained.
Yeah,
yes.
Yes, which is good. But these works have been totally just so well-received, because it's just different enough to make it different, but you're still recognizing, of course, all these really popular tunes.
Saturday, May 21st?
Yes, 7:30 p.m., Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center. It's our season finale, and there are tickets available, not many. 452-7575 is the number to call, and fortsmithsymphony.org is our website, which will give you more information. But Robert's a terrific guy. He's had a recording contract with RCA for a number of years, and we're really looking forward to having him come.
John, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
The Justice Department announced yesterday that 19-year-old Sean Popejoy of Green Forest pled guilty at a federal court hearing in Harrison to one count of committing a federal hate crime and one count of conspiring to commit a federal hate crime. Popejoy is the first to be convicted for violating the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, enacted in October of 2009. Both Shepard, a gay Wyoming college student, and Byrd, an African American living in Texas, were brutally murdered over a decade ago. The Hate Crimes Prevention Act was signed into law by President Obama in late 2009. A hate crime occurs when the perpetrator intentionally selects a victim based on their race or sexual identity.
According to the U.S. Department of Justice, Popejoy admitted he threatened and injured five Hispanic men who had pulled into a gas station parking lot in Alpena. Popejoy was accused, along with Frankie Maybe, of pursuing the victims in a truck, leaning outside of the front passenger window, waving a tire wrench at the victims, and hurling racial slurs. The U.S. Department of Justice says that the victim's car was rammed into, causing it to cross into the opposite lane of traffic, go off the road, crash into a tree, and ignite. As a result, the record says, the victim suffered bodily injury, with one sustaining life-threatening injuries. Popejoy faces up to 15 years in prison. He's expected to testify against Frankie Maybe, also of Green Forest, who has pled not guilty. Both men remain in federal custody.
University of Arkansas campuses are proposing more tuition increases as part of their budgets for the next fiscal year. The increases vary, but at most, the increases for four-year campuses will be about 6%. UA System President B. Allen Sugg says the colleges have low faculty salaries and have done a lot to cut costs, but they still have to raise tuition rates.
State appropriations to four-year universities are flat. There's an ever-increasing number of students attending college, costs for new faculty members, increasing costs for other expenditures of the university as you take care of new students and existing students. Utility prices and other issues like that are continuing to rise.
The UA System Board will vote on the proposals this Friday at their meeting on the UA Pine Bluff campus.
A former board member on the State Game and Fish Commission wants the Pulaski County prosecuting attorney to investigate allegations that several commissioners mismanaged funds. Sheffield Nelson says the commission spent $800,000 and received little or no results.
It appears they're just not taking care of business. Now, I noticed they had scapegoats. They threw their auditor and his assistant under the bus, but that doesn't answer what happened at the top. You had three commissioners, Mahoney, Campbell, and Watkins, who were supposedly in charge of auditing due to their serving on the governance committee, didn't follow up with the responsibilities. It got awry, and they didn't even know about it.
Nelson also wants a summary judgment from the court to determine if the Freedom of Information Act and Administrative Procedures Act are relevant to the commission's work.
One person was killed Monday when a building collapsed in downtown Morrilton. It destroyed a beauty salon and a neighboring business. Several people inside were able to escape. Five others were hospitalized. John Gibson is with the Morrilton Chamber of Commerce, whose offices are about a block away from the collapse.
The buildings just, it's like they imploded. The two spaces that were involved, and they're still in the process of removing debris and searching through it.
The person killed was a young girl. Authorities continue to investigate what caused the building, which is one of the oldest in Morrilton, to collapse.
The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will open its final homestand of the regular season tonight at Baum Stadium. Arkansas hosts Tennessee Martin at 6:30 for a non-conference game. The regular season will end this week with three games against Mississippi beginning Thursday night. The Razorbacks open the week in a four-way tie for first place in the SEC West. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals are back in first place in the Texas League North after defeating Tulsa 5-4 last night in Oklahoma. The Nats now have a half-game lead over Tulsa and will play the Drillers again tonight in Tulsa.
Several area high school soccer, softball, and baseball teams will play for state championships this weekend. Yesterday, semifinals for most classifications were held around the state. Boys soccer teams from Bentonville, Siloam Springs, and Clarksville, and the girls soccer team from Bentonville advanced to their state finals yesterday. The Boys and Girls Soccer State Championships will be played at Razorback Field on the University of Arkansas campus Friday and Saturday. Softball teams from Farmington and Atkins will play for state titles this weekend in Fayetteville. And baseball teams from Shiloh Christian, Prairie Grove, and Elkins will play for state championships in Conway Friday and Saturday.
And we have an addition to the KUAF family to announce. Andrea and Brian Rochelle welcomed their new daughter, Annabelle, to the world yesterday. She weighs 7 pounds and 6 ounces. Congratulations to the new parents and the new big brother, Alex.
And if you need another example of the power of social media, here's a local one. Last week, Chipotle Mexican Grill opened a new restaurant in the old Frisco Train Depot, located on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Prior to the eatery's grand opening, some local residents were upset that a Chipotle sign had been placed over the Fayetteville sign on the south side of the building. Chris Selby, a Fayetteville resident, was unhappy with the placement of the sign and decided to do something about it. He started a Facebook page to spread the word.
I guess, like, everybody's grandmother and grandchild's on Facebook now, and you can, it's pretty well designed to be able to get people's attention on certain subjects if they've got interest in them that, you know, you can pick and choose easily. And it spreads really fast. People get messages. People have keyboards. They can type things about this. Computers. I don't know. It's a lot easier than it would have been even 2 years ago. But just everybody being on one social media type of site and it being like real localized, you know, makes a huge difference.
The new restaurant was placed in the 1925 depot that was built in the Mission Spanish Colonial Revival style. The Frisco Depot was listed in the National Register of Historic Places in 1988. Selby says what appeared to be most upsetting to Fayetteville residents about the new restaurant coming to town was that its management made changes to a historic building.
Mostly, yeah, historical significance and Fayetteville sign, and we're a little town, and we don't. And I think some people aren't real happy with all the, you know, franchise restaurants going on in the Dixon Street area. So, like, that was just, like, the straw that broke the camel's back was, all right, all the, you know, like, Waffle House is coming down there, and Qdoba's down there, and Jimmy John's and all this, which there were never really places like that before. I can think of Lenny's Stub Shop, but it didn't last long. They had to get that jewelry store in there. And so, yeah, I think it was just, wow, they're coming in here and they're kind of being jerks by putting the sign over the Fayetteville sign. So I think that people got people wound up more.
Selby's Facebook page has been liked by more than 500 people. On May 4th, Selby also directly contacted the company through its webpage. Within 24 hours, he received a response from Ashley Warren, a representative from Chipotle's customer service department. She wrote that after checking with the team responsible for the Fayetteville location, they made the decision to remove the Chipotle sign and relocate it. Selby then shared the email on his Facebook page.
I thought it was a nice email, and I, you know, if I'm going to call people out for things like that, I want to also give them credit for when they do something. I don't want to just, yeah, keep them under the bus the whole time.
By May 7th, the Fayetteville sign was once again visible to those traveling along Dixon Street.
I'm very happy they moved the sign. I think it's a great thing because, you know, they didn't do any damage to the sign, which was nice. It was kind of hard to tell, you know, when I walked up there. But yeah, they took it down.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda. It's Tuesday, May 17th, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us now is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
You're going to find out all week that what I have to offer you are tough choices.
Okay.
Tonight, there's a pretty clear choice. It's the debut of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. 80 world-class musicians playing American music. Mm-hmm. The concert's called American Soundscapes. Rodeo by Aaron Copland. Songbook by Daniel Schneider, who's actually in town to play jazz sax with the orchestra. 7 p.m., Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Now, here's the amazing part of this.
Oh, I know what you can say.
It's free. Free. You have to go by the Walton Arts Center and get a ticket.
And the reason you have to have a ticket is because it is thought that this will be at capacity.
Right.
So get
the
ticket.
They want to make sure you have a seat.
Right.
But go there today, get the ticket for tonight, see a group of musicians that have been together less than 10 days.
Yeah. The conductor, Corrado Riveras, picked the programs. He picked the musicians. This is the orchestra he wanted.
Lovely man.
Really? Once in a lifetime opportunity here.
Lovely man. So go do that tonight. Tomorrow at noon, if you can, go to the Shiloh Museum in Springdale for a program called Bee Gums and Flax Skeins, Farming in the Pioneer Ozarks. It's Brooks Blevins. Love him.
Oh, wow.
He'll be in town tomorrow at noon at the Shiloh Museum. Not only is admission free, they give you cookies.
Yay, cookies.
That's better than free. That's like you're paid to go to Shiloh Museum.
Right?
Exactly.
And cookies. I will take payment in cookies.
I'll take. Well, yeah.
We're journalists. We're lucky when we get cookies.
There's a joke about working for peanuts in there somewhere, but we won't go there.
That's it.
Thanks, Becca.
Thank you, guys.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Before I knew what the definition of a third place was, I was kind of struggling.
Sierra Eubanks is a student in Linda Brothers' creative writing class at Fayetteville High School. The class participated in the poetivity part of the ongoing Artisphere Festival in Northwest Arkansas by writing poems with nature as the third place as the theme.
After I knew what it meant, like nature and involved with something social, it was pretty easy because, I mean, we live in Arkansas. It's beautiful out here, and it was pretty easy.
Sierra is finishing up her junior year at FHS this spring, and she chose a favorite swimming hole in the rural Arkansas Ozarks for her inspiration.
It all makes sense on the Gar Hole shore. Hot meadows. Like a snake, I shed my skin, shed my frown, shed my shirt. Revealed like bare innocence and stretching like the leaves through hunger and growing pains. Ants cross my flesh streets and I'm very close to home. I hear a thousand voices in the hushed murmur of the stream, 100 million brushing fingertips, all growing tall on the bank. I realize it's only you coming to say, jump in. The sun sets in my pores, the dirt beneath my nails making lovely brown crescent moons. Warm mud, I squish my toes so deep I think I'll sink forever. We make a break for the waterhole, run, quick before we're dazzled again, stuck staring at cracks of blue sky. Soaking deep in the underwater life, just a rush of water to keep me afloat, I know. My chromosomes start to shake, and I think I can't take one more minute of perfection, then I surface. It's twilight on the shore. Teenagers are loving in plain sight because they know too. I wish to drown quick before anything this beautiful can be taken away, before this Arkansas mud forgets my name.
Sierra Eubanks, a junior at Fayetteville High School, reading her poetry inside Linda Brothers' classroom. Sierra writes that she thinks the creative writing class is the cat's meow and the bee's knees, all wrapped into one class period. The class wrote poems with nature as the third place as part of the Artisphere Festival presented by Walton Arts Center. Tomorrow on Ozarks, another poem from the class. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Welcome back, Wayne.
Ah, thanks for having me.
The movie Bridesmaids came in second overall nationally, and it's creating a bit of a buzz. Generally, very positive reviews. It is an R-rated comedy. What's different about this R-rated comedy is women take all the lead roles.
Mm-hmm. And I saw the returns on it. I have yet to see it, though I know you saw it this weekend. I have yet to see it. The returns on it showed that the audience was about 68-70% women. So
I can tell you that I went on Friday afternoon, and I was probably, yeah, that's about right. There was about 40% men, 60% women in there.
And expectations for it put it at about, I think, 20 million, and ended up making about 28 or 26. So, I mean, it did well. It beat expectations and projections. And I think the reviews have been so good that it should have some legs on it. It should stay around for part of the summer, which good female-driven movies tend to do.
Well, this one is receiving some attention because it is a female-driven movie that doesn't have Meryl Streep, that isn't a series. It's a comedy, and not a...
That doesn't happen often.
And not an R-rated. This is a... Viewers should be warned, it's a foul-mouthed, at times a gross-out comedy. It is a comedy that we're more used to seeing headlined by men.
Well, a lot of people I saw in the press were calling it the female Hangover. I didn't like The Hangover, so I hope that's not the case. But it does, you know, share some similarities. It's got a larger cast. It has Rose Byrne and Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig. So, I mean, it's got a couple of females of note. So I think the bigger question here, it was still beaten by Thor.
I've also seen.
Oh, and?
All right. It's very entertaining. It's not art, but it's entertaining.
Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
But... It was still beaten by Thor, but it did beat projections. And so it raises a really interesting question, which is these type movies are so rare, these female-driven movies, with the exception of maybe around the holidays, if there's like a Nancy Meyers movie with Meryl Streep, you know, like It's Complicated or something.
Or Reese Witherspoon sort of light romantic comedy.
Yeah, but for the most part, the summer female showy films are so rare, and yet they tend to, every time that they do come out, they tend to beat projections. Sex and the City, I think, was predicted, the first one, a couple of years ago at 25 and came out about 60, and it was a shocker. But the studios just refuse to make movies for adult women. It's crazy.
What I don't understand is why people are shocked when, last time I checked, women made up more of the population than men, and this idea that it's only men and young men that go to movies, well, it seems like to be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's sexist. I mean, this happens every year where this discussion comes up around this time of the year, where you look at the slate of movies that are coming out for the summer, and for the most part, it's these male-driven action movies. This year, you have Thor and Pirates of the Caribbean and The Green Hornet and, you know, all these male-driven movies that maybe have a female in a small part.
Love interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's Green Lantern, by the way.
See, that's how much I care. But, you know, every year... or every couple of years, the female, it's gotten the rep of being the chick flick, but that's not necessarily true. They're not chick flicks. They're just female-driven movies. And you look over the past few summers, you've had things like Bridesmaids, Sex and the City. You had Devil Wears Prada. You had Mamma Mia, both of which had Meryl Streep.
Julie and Julia.
Yeah. So... these movies, every time they come out, they go, these beat expectations, but studios still refuse to see women as a demographic, a paying demographic.
Well, isn't it also short-sighted to just assume that a movie like It's Complicated or Jules and Julia or Bridesmaids will only appeal to women?
Well, unfortunately, if you look at the demographics, that's the problem. If it's still 70% women, then you've got an issue. Because here's the thing. If Thor comes out and does really well, it may have slightly more men in the audience, but they're dragging their girlfriend, or the girlfriend is going to see the star of Thor or the star of whatever the action movie is. Where with Bridesmaids or Sex and the City, if you remember when Sex and the City, the first one, came out, it was a bunch of women getting together to go to parties and stuff, and then they would go to the movie. It was groups of women, but there really weren't that many men. And that's proven again with Bridesmaids this weekend, where if 70% of the audience is female, then there aren't a lot of men going.
Several years ago, there was some lamenting publicly that there weren't enough movies directed at families.
Right.
And suddenly Pixar started to hit. And now you can't. There's not a weekend where something doesn't open up, whether it's Ringo or Rio or some animated. And now the family market, between Pixar and DreamWorks, that's been matched out as a pretty profitable slice of the Hollywood pie.
That's very profitable.
With Sex and the City, and now with Bridesmaids doing well, and these other movies, will Hollywood say, okay, there is room for female-driven movies?
Not as long as the studios aren't run by...
Oh, well.
I mean, that's the problem, is that industry is still terribly sexist. It's still run by, you know, powerful men. The Oscar for Best Actress every year ends up going to the hot young babe for the most part, over the seasoned actress. And so it doesn't seem like it's going to turn around that quick. I will say there was a time in the mid-90s where one woman was reviving this, and she was doing it really successfully, and that was Julia Roberts. I mean, every summer she was killing it with a blockbuster, and then she had children, and she doesn't really do, you know, that genre as much anymore. And in her footsteps, Cameron Diaz and Reese Witherspoon and Kate Hudson and Katherine Heigl, they have struggled. Their movies just don't live up, partially because they're just not good. So this is interesting. I mean, not only are they not getting made, but there hasn't been somebody to fill that void either. Meryl Streep is kind of her own commodity, and everything she lately touches goes to gold. But you know, it's a culmination of a lot of things, but at its root, it's that women still aren't taken seriously, and it's a shame. All-time favorite chick flick, do you have one?
See, I don't know how you define chick flick. Would we define it as a movie that is...
I would say it's got either one woman or two women above the title, way up there, and really not any man above the title.
Okay. You know, I really enjoyed, and this is going back a ways, and I don't know if this is my favorite, but it's one that I enjoy very much, and it was 9 to 5.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic. That's a smart one. Twisted movie.
It is a twisted movie, and you have Dolly Parton, who's fun, and Jane Fonda, who was always great, and Lily Tomlin.
Yep.
And I think all three of them are a lot of fun.
Two good choices.
Okay. Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Time for our question of the day. And winners today will receive tickets to tonight's premiere performance from the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. It's tonight at Walton Arts Center, begins at 7. So if you do win, you'll need to be able to pick up the tickets here at KUAF.
Mm-hmm.
And we have more than a few.
We have a couple. So
what we're going to do is,
when you win and we give you a call, you'll be able to tell us about how many tickets you can take instead of just two, because I'm sure some of you have large groups that would like to go, and we have quite a few tickets. So,
right. So if you're a family and you would like to go, and remember, the concert is free, but you do need tickets to get in.
Yes.
All right. So the question today is the 100th anniversary of the birth of actress Maureen Sullivan. Maureen O'Sullivan, I should say. And Maureen O'Sullivan played Jane in half a dozen Tarzan movies from 1932 to 1942, opposite Johnny Weissmuller, beginning in the first movie, Tarzan the Ape Man, going all the way through Tarzan's New York adventure in 1942. The question then, what was Jane's last name in these movies? Was it Parker, was it Burroughs, or was it McDowell?
It's a good one. All right, if you have a guess or you know the answer, give us a call at 800-522-5823.
It's 800-522-5823. All correct answers go into the ceramic cow.
Good luck.
All right. Time for our answer. The question, what was Jane's name in the first several Tarzan movies? We did that in honor of the 100th anniversary of the birth of Maureen O'Sullivan. She played Jane in the first six Tarzan movies out of Hollywood. The choices, was she Jane Parker, Jane Burroughs, or Jane McDowell?
And the answer
is
Jane Parker.
That's right, Jane Parker. Burroughs, of course, I took because Edgar Rice Burroughs wrote the Tarzan books.
Of course.
And McDowell was inspired by Roddy McDowell, who is in most of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Okay, that
all
works.
Right, so is Jane Parker. We'll be calling the winners for tickets for tonight's Artisphere Festival Orchestra performance.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the 61st Annual Opera in the Ozarks from June 24th to July 22nd at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. Productions include Little Women, Die Fledermaus, and Le Nozze di Figueroa. Sunday performances will be held at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville from July 3rd through the 17th. Tickets and more information available at opera.org.
Few more notes as we end the program. A rain barrel workshop is scheduled for Saturday afternoon from 2 until 4 at Devil's Den State Park. There is a cost. Pre-registration is required. If you'd like more information, you can either call 761-3325 or go online to ArkansasStateParks.com. Also Saturday, the Block Street Block Party, a grand party to celebrate Fayetteville's funkiness. Well, I said it was Saturday. It's actually Sunday. It's planned for Sunday, the 22nd, on Block Street. It will include live music, vendors, giveaways, contests, beer gardens, raffles, art, and a competitive hot dog eating contest. For the full event schedule or more information, also online, blockstreetbusinesses.com. And the Fort Smith Little Theater will present The Sound of Music beginning in late July. Auditions, however, are next week, May 23rd, 24th, and 26th at Goddard United Methodist Church in Fort Smith. If you'd like more information about auditions, fslt.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Jane, Missouri. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, KUAF.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon.
Have a great day. Thank you.